traveling the world, searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey, racing fans, Steve Wolf here for the International Equine Network's Flying Turn Show. And with me, the founder of the International Equine Network, our own Scott Miller.
How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing good.
Okay,
a little
good.
Soggy here these days in South Florida, but that's why they call it the rainy season.
Yeah, we got about 4 inches out here. Hey, Steve, I was excited. We did the test on Zoom this morning to start carrying our programming on video. And, you know, we're going to work some things out, but next week we might be able to do that if we can get it all together. And then we can start seeing some of the racing and all the things that you do with Harness Link on video.
That's great. Will we be able to, zoom into the Harness Link page on the computer and air that?
Oh, I'm sure we will, because you guys got a YouTube channel at Harness Link that they've just put up, and you're not using it. So maybe we can use that to find turns, for a 30-minute program every week for YouTube on Harness Link. You know, so we'll be able to get that all in there. And then, you know, you can tell us about, we'll be able to show the Meadowlands pace, for example, on video.
Yeah, that's great. We'd be able, especially that stretch drive. What a performance, actually, by both horses. And, and you know what? We can start off the show by talking about that, because everyone's still talking about the Meadowlands pace night at the Meadowlands last Saturday, and how harness racing in general needed a night like that. You know, $2.6 million in purses, over $5 million in total handle, which the Meadowlands has not done since 2008. That's how big a night it was. And literally every one of the major stake races was as good as the other. But the effort by Tall Dark Stranger in as Poppy Rob Hanover was parked first over, he was able to grind down and take the lead at the top of the stretch from Tall Dark Stranger, who had been cutting horrendous fractions. But yet Yannick Jingra was able to draw up on the horse and get just one more surge up the rail, and he collared Poppy Rod Hanover and then beat him by half a length in 147 and two, which is one of three. Go ahead.
What were the track conditions like? Was it a fast track?
Super
fast track. Times.
Yeah, fast track and super fast horses. But Yannick Jingra, even he thought he was going to get beaten. When he asked the horse, when he started to put a drive on him, the horse just responded, dug in, true grit, and came back and won it. I mean, it was a remarkable race. And that night there were other major races of importance. The top trotter in the nation, Jim Banzi, after his awesome triumph in the Hamiltonian Maturity, is now unbeaten in four starts this year, all in stake races. And he's number one in the Harness Racing Top 10 poll for the second straight week. Tall Dark Stranger is number two. But Gib Panzi in his race, they went a mile and a 16th. He was actually just sweeping wide on the top of the stretch, you know, looking to get into contention. And then as they straightened out, I mean, I've not seen this done before, but Brian Sears driving, he kicks the earplugs out at the top of the stretch, you know, just as they straighten out, and out come the earplugs, and this horse, you know, he goes from fourth to fifth gear and blows by the field to win it all.
Do you think that the reason he did that is because of the earplugs, or, you know, some of our listeners might not understand about the earplugs?
Okay. Earplugs are exactly what they say. They're plugs, huge cotton balls that go into the horse's ears, and they're attached with a line down to near the driver's feet. So when they reach a point in the race where they need an extra surgence from their horse, you know, that pretty much to let them get the rush of what's going on, they kick their foot out, and those earplugs pop right out. And when that happens, the horse gets that gets to hear all the sounds. Everything's going on. He's getting urged from the back by the driver. He knows it's time to race and to dig in. But usually you would pull the earplugs, you know, at the three-quarter pole, you know, in the backstretch, you know, to keep the horse going. I think he pulled the earplugs only to let the horse get used to it and what to expect from him when they pull, because he had such momentum, he was going to pass all these trotters by. No matter what, he was going to win the race by two lengths without pulling the earplugs. And I think he just pulled them, you know, to make sure the horse knew that when that happened, he had to go even faster. And the horse responded. I mean, he just tore off.
You're saying that about the earplugs and all, how important it is to, you know, the athlete, and the horse is an athlete. In baseball, they're putting cardboard cutouts in the state. And they've got recorded sound from previous games, like when a guy hits a home run and how the crowd roars. You think they'll ever do that with the horse racing?
I don't think so, because a lot of places have their mics set up so that they can record the horse's hooves hitting the track as they come down the stretch. Whether there's fans yelling or not, There's always action in horse racing, just from the horses, you know, their feet hitting the ground. I mean, if it's a hot night and it's dry, they have to put a lot of water down. That track's going to be somewhat hard, and you're going to hear those hooves pounded. And you can actually tell how fast they're going by the rhythm of their feet hitting the ground.
Well. What's it look like for the next encounter? Will any of these horses run up against each other here in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, that's gonna happen again. What we're hoping for eventually is to see Gimpanzee race against Atlanta and Manchego, because right now Atlanta and Manchego, they're both trotting mares, but I think right now they're the top two trotting mares in North America. Whether trots against horses or not. In other words, until they race against Gimpanzee and see how well they do, which will probably happen later this season. It's you know, and it could very well happen on Hamiltonian Day, depending on how the stakes go. But, you know,
that's on the 8th of August, isn't it?
Yes. So this is sort of what they call the bye week, where horses will go that are eligible to the Hamiltonian or the Oaks. They'll either go to the Meadowlands or they'll race in some overnight events to get geared up to go in the eliminations. The eliminations will be the first Saturday in August, the 1st, and then the finals for the Oaks and the Hamiltonian will be on the 8th.
Well, I tell you, it's going to be an exciting next 2 months here with all the races coming up, you know, not only for thoroughbreds, but for the show horses and, you know, the standardbreds. And, you know, something that we haven't touched on that much, you know, has been about the Breeders' Crown. You know, that's coming up fairly quick, too. It'll be here before you know it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is. But right now, we're going to savor each weekend's great matchups. Up in New England is the biggest races this weekend in harness racing, as Atlanta and Manchego continue their rivalry. They're going for $250,000 in the Spirit of Massachusetts Trot at Plain Ridge Racecourse. That's on Sunday afternoon. Also on the card, Chardonnay back in action. She headlines. She's trying to do a repeat win in the $100,000 Clara Barton mare's pace. And the question of the day, though, is, Scott Miller, do you know who Clara Barton is?
No, I don't. I've heard the name, but I don't know who Clara Barton is.
She's
a lady from Europe, I believe, right?
No. She was born in the United States in 1821, but she was a nurse.
And she's still racing?
She's still racing, I think so. But she was a nurse back then who, during the Civil War, was an exception because she was black. She was not white, but yet she worked hard and fought and campaigned for nursing, and she's the woman who helped develop the American Red Cross.
Wow. Now,
and
so they named
her. She lived until she was. What I thought was remarkable is that Clara Barton lived until she was 91, and that was tough to do from somebody who was born in the 1820s.
She didn't pass
away till like 1912.
It's amazing.
So the race is going good. I'm sorry?
Who are we going to have in the races this weekend? It's got to be a star-studded weekend.
It all depends on where you go. Some of the horses that race Saturday at the Meadowlands, they're getting a week off because this is what's considered a bye week. But in that same venue, the eliminations are this Saturday at the Meadows for the $450,000 Adios pace. And Tall Dark Stranger didn't enter. He's getting off. But Poppy Rob Hanover is, and he'll be the horse to beat. In fact, there's 21 horses racing this Saturday in the eliminations. Only the first three finishers in each of the three heats get to return for the final. So you know there'll be claw and tooth and nail to get, you know, make sure they get in the first three spots to make it to the rich final next week.
All right. Well, you know what interested me about the Adios is that we've got a lot, Tony Alanya. You know, he's got five entered, I believe, you know, for the, and Scott Jerram will be driving. So, you know, we have quite a few, interested, you know, in this for this weekend. But hopefully Sunshine Meadows, you know, based horse will come out of it.
We wanted to talk about Tony Alanya and one of those Sunshine Meadow horses that won last Saturday and was super impressive. And her name is Ramona Hill. She was the Dan Patch winning two-year-old trotting filly of the year. And she came back and seemed to be okay, but she was in against a couple tough rivals. She was she had the 10 post. We got to talk about post positions too. She had the 10 post, but she was able, with her speed and ability, able to overcome it. And not only that, but she just powered her way. And when you watch the replay, you can see that these are trotting fillies. They're not as big or muscled as the colts are. They're a little more, shall we say, daintier, except when Ramona Hill comes to the lead and she overpowered. She looked like an Amazon. I mean, she was heads apart. If when she was on the inside and a horse came on the outside of her, you couldn't see that horse because she's such, you know, a bodybuilder looking horse.
Uh-huh.
And Tony Alanya was tickled pink and knew that she was going to come back and show her true form, to the point where they're not counting out the idea of racing her against the Colts.
Oh, that would be, well, I remember she's big. she's
yeah,
an athlete.
She's,
and
yeah,
also,
and she's
how do you think
in
she
perfect
would
shape. Oh, I think she would fare very well. Very well, because it'll be a decent 3-year-old trotting colt crop. But when you have a mare like that, that's feeling her oats and is primed for this race, it's just like gearing up for the Derby. I mean, these trainers are getting these horses ready, and this happened a couple years ago with another Sunshine Meadows horse, a filly by the name of Atlanta.
Right.
You know, right. She was pointed right for the Hamiltonian and came through and beat the boys, really surprised everyone. And for Ramona Hill, we also have to say, when you're a great horse, the post position is not going to make a difference because she had the 10 post. She couldn't get to the early lead. You know, she had to work her way out, but she overcame it. And the same with Gympansy. They went a mile and eighth in a maturity, but there were 13 horses in the race. So the 11, 12, and 13th horses all have to start in the second tier behind the other horses. And Gympansy, he had post 13. And it was his lucky number because he overcame it.
You know, what I really like about when they run against the colts or the geldings, the fillies or mares, like in thoroughbreds, you get a weight allowance if you run against the boys. You know, in standardbreds, it's just your horse against their horse. And she doesn't get any breaks. They don't cut her any slack. So that is one heck of a horse when they go in and do things like
that. That's right. And Scott, you said essentially how harness racing was developed. And that is on the country roads or even in the city streets, because back then they weren't as crowded, as congested as they were today. But it was, can my horse beat your horse? Didn't matter how old it was, if it was a mare, if it was a gelding, if it was just a stallion, is my horse better than your horse? And that's the grassroots of racing right there.
Yep, you're exactly right about that.
Now,
well, it looks like it's going to be an exciting next couple of months.
Oh, exactly. All the way through to the Breeders' Crown and end of October, early November. And there'll still be Dover Downs usually has the Matron Stakes, too, for some horses to get a little late stakes money if they weren't, you know, that good in the beginning of the season and they've picked up and done well. There's still some more stake races. So it's a jam-packed season, and horses may be making a few less starts, but they're racing for good money, and they have to race super hard every week. I mean, there's hardly any breaks along the way, so the horses have to enjoy them while they can, and I'm sure that's why horses like Gympansy and Tall Dark Stranger and them, they won so impressively, they're going to probably take this week off and then get ready for the Meadowlands for the next couple weeks, you know, through the Hamiltonian.
Yeah. Now, between now and Breeders' Crown and Hamiltonian, will they get a week off? Will they get a break somewhere along the line? Would that be an option?
This week.
One of the trainers?
This is probably the one of the second one in August that they can take a break from. It all depends on the classification of horse. You know, there's in August, there's the Zweig Memorial. There's more races coming up at the Meadows. The Grand Circuit gets spread out a little bit more. I mean, it seems every week there's great races popping up someplace. And when you're on the Grand Circuit, what you have to do is you got to travel. In other words, you can't just stay at the Meadowlands. I mean, it's nice to be base there if there's races at Pocono or Yonkers or Harrah's, Philadelphia. You have to go out to Pittsburgh, but then other tracks in Ohio, New England. There's all sorts of racing opportunities out there. But I got to switch gears now. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just one quick question here. Have they had any problems going state to state and track to track with drivers or for horses?
No, there hasn't been. And the only questions that remain to be answered have to do with going into Canada, you know, to be able to go up there to race for a couple weeks whether or not trainers will have to give their horses, because the horses, they're okay to enter and come and go. So they may very well have to give the horses to another trainer up there, which they do. In some cases, they do it without, you know, the virus affecting it or not. They're just, the trainers can only be in so many places. And if they have someone up in Canada who can take care of the horse and race it, then that's what they do.
That sounds good. It sounds like the business is going good. So what you got for us next?
Next we're going to talk about some serious stuff. There's only one track left in North America that hasn't been able to reopen for harness racing, and that's Monticello Raceway. And the management that owns the track also owns the casino, and it seems apparent that they were not going to open and get harness racing started again until the casino can be opened. And now the Horsemen's Association is suing the racetrack because they want to open. The racetrack has countered and said, fine, we'll open, but any money that you make from simulcasting, that all has to be given back to us for running everything, for hiring the judges and the track crew and doing, you know, all this stuff to get ready, which the Horsemen's Association can't really afford to do. And they're going to have to now face it in court and see if a judge will uphold it and tell them to open up and race again. I mean, it's a sin for the horsemen at Monticello because their caliber of horses is not really that conducive to be able to race at Yonkers or the Meadowlands. And thus, right, driving, you know, 3-4 hours to a Vernon or a Saratoga, or 5-6 hours to go to Batavia Downs, you know, where the horses could be competitive. Right. Not only is it's a lost leader in travel and costs, but if the race office allows these outside horses to come and race there, they're now depriving the local horsemen from racing opportunity. So, I mean, it's almost a catch 22, but in a problematic way.
Are they training there at Monticello?
No,
the Barnesville?
No. I know they're locally training. I don't know what the status is in the barn area. I know the track is being maintained, whether it's in race shape or they, you know, just keeping it pliable, I guess, would be the word, and until they know about racing. And
you know what, Steve? Pompano ought to make a phone call and tell them to come on down here to Pompano. Pompano needs to go to the Racing Commission and say, look, you know, this is what we could do.
Well, they can always add racing to a degree, but first and most, Scott, today is Thursday. I don't think the sun has really shined much since Sunday, and it's pouring rain every single day. I don't think that would make for good racing down here, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, that's true, Jay.
That's true. But and now the biggest problem out there, the major headline of the week, is that the Meadowlands trainers, some have been caught up in an entrapment case with the New Jersey Racing Commission. And what has happened is the New Jersey Racing Commission changed rulings changed the ruling for the use of Butte, which used to be 24 hours out. It is now 48 hours out. But in doing so, they apparently never sent a letter to the Horsemen's Association, the Standardbreds. They did for the Thoroughbreds, reminding them to tell their veterinarians that they have to abide by this rule and that any horse that comes up positive, you know, it can fall back on them, the veterinarians, for administering it wrong. Well, according to Mark Ford, the president of the SPOA, that letter was never received. And while the Thoroughbreds, you know, had been fine with it, now that they started testing for 48 hours out, horsemen started coming up positive. And the first three positives were dealt with at the Meadowlands on Friday in a hearing where, you know, everything was brought out that the Racing Commission failed to properly notify anyone about it, because all the three different veterinarians on the three different trainers said there was no notification. Mark Ford, president of the SBOA, said we never got any notification. You just started running the test. And, of course, it's a he said, she said that, well, the thoroughbreds knew all about it. But I just can't believe that the state of New Jersey, the Racing Commission, is fining these guys. And each of them has one offense, which carries 15-day suspension, loss of purse, and a $500 fine. So it's not a good thing. And of course,
these are private trainers.
I'm sorry.
Would the trainers be able to appeal that?
Yes, this is an appeal hearing that was vehemently denied or not upheld by the Racing Commission. So I'm not sure the next status, because they're going to go to court over it. But the next day, three or four more different trainers at the Meadowlands came up with the same positive. So these trainers are prominent. They know, they should know, they do know what's going on here. So why would they go against the new ruling? If they knew that it was 48 hours out, however, the veterinarians, they didn't know. I mean, something got messed up in the cracks with the commission, and all these penalties should be absolutely thrown out.
Yeah, have they tried to contact the Racing Commission, you know, the trainers and the vets?
Oh, they met with them. They met with them and told them, and the judges from the Meadowlands was at the hearing, and the head of the Racing Commission was there and saying vehemently, everybody should have been aware of this. There's no excuse for this, and the fines will stay. So that they've got a really angry court case going on there, and that's what the word is. The word of the week is entrapment. I mean, you know, you change the scope of how you test for medication, but you don't properly advertise to everyone not to do it. Here's what the rules are.
Right. Well, you know, it seems like that they're going to do something like that, the Racing Commission should have, you know, a certified letter type thing, you know, go out, or an email go out that, you know, says you must respond to this email, you know, so that we know that.
Exactly. Why would anyone involved with the horses and the Horsemen's Association not want to be able to tell everybody and make sure that there was no argument over the changing of the rule? They can understand that, and they're willing to abide by it. But without proper notification, you just start doing it. And I know in the past, when you make a change in medication like this, that people, not everyone's going to hear about it. So the first time it happens, you get a warning. In fact, in other cases, that's what happens. Hey, your horse came up, it's supposed to be, you know, 48 hours, not within 24. You came up positive. If it happens again, 15 days, $500, and loss of purse. I mean, it's a extremely severe penalty, especially this time of year. I mean, unless you appeal it and then go to a judge, you know, to get a quicker or get a prolonged hearing on it, you know, you're racing under appeal. And that might come back and haunt you if it said, no, here it is. Now you got to take your 15 days. And it's not like you can say, okay, I'll take them on the second week in November. That doesn't happen that way. Well, it's once the decision's made, then you serve the time.
Right. Well, you know, it's a checks and balance thing. And if you make sure every veterinarian, and whichever track has a list of veterinarians that comes to the track, and you've got a list of every trainer that's there, every owner that's there, you know, it's a check and balance. You know, you send out the email, you send out the certified letter, word of mouth or whatever, you know, and then you don't have that problem. But it doesn't sound, it sounds like the veterinarians weren't notified, owners weren't notified, trainers weren't notified, drivers, harness link wasn't notified.
They're racing every week. They're racing every week at the Meadowlands. Why wouldn't the Horsemen's Association be pounding it out? Why wouldn't the Racing Commission give them a notification letter? Their office is right there at the Meadowlands. It's very easy to go out, put it up with a bulletin board, hand out, you know, flyers to everyone, put it on the condition sheets, you know, the judges and stuff, race secretary, race office. There's 100 different things you can do to get this word out. It's just that they didn't do it. It wasn't done, and it wasn't done properly.
See, that's why they call me the governor here. I stay up on all that stuff, and I go around and tell everybody. You know me, how I like to talk. I go out and tell it all. You know,
the commission's going to state how.
You know, what are these trainers going to do? That's on their record.
Apparently, Mark Ford, the president of the SBOA New Jersey, told the trainers at the hearing that the SBOA will cover the attorney costs to fight this. So they're going for injunction from the judges right now so that these guys don't get suspended, and that the commission, you know, they're probably going to have to sue the commission to, you know, revert it back and not fine these guys.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you know,
it's going to be an ongoing thing. Yeah.
Right. It's just amazing how they start to make a comeback and then they get a little setback like this. And that's something that we just don't need. And I think their commission should, you know, reevaluate things and say, okay, you know, let's start over.
Right. If nobody was coming up positive and this was just one case, You could make a decision that, hey, you know, this is it. You got caught and the fine was properly notified. But this is too many trainers, too many veterinarians that were not informed. They just were not properly informed.
Right. I tell you, it's always something, you know. It's always something, you know, in the business. And in the Meadowlands and all the different tracks, they seem to be doing pretty good. The handles are getting up there. You know, it seems like you're kind of like rebounding a little bit. You know, success is, you know, just around the corner. And then we get something like this, and from all places, you're racing.
Yes, things were gearing up fine. And, of course, a majority of racetracks are now owned by casino companies. And if these casinos can't open, you know, for the regular gambling, which supports racing immensely, then, you know, racing is going to reach a point where it's going to start degrading again. So, I mean, you got to hope that these tracks can have handle, because there's a lot of tracks out there that can handle $1 million on a night, but they're not making money. I mean, they're breaking even. They're just, you know, sort of surviving. You know, a track like the Meadowlands, of course, you know, they gave out $2.6 million in purses. A lot of it wasn't just the Meadowlands money. Took in $5 million. That's about $150,000. You know, in income. Does that cover all the expense of the $2.6 million in purses? I don't know. I think it's almost a break even. But in this days of pandemic and everything, breaking even is not a bad thing.
Right. Well, you know, even more importantly now, you know, talking about generating money, I know what the costs are to get a, you know, banner on the finish line at the Meadowlands. I've dealt with them before. They've helped us a lot here at Sunshine Meadows. And then, you know, when you think about it, the starter car, the water trucks, you know, the tractors, those are all sources of income now, you know, for the different tracks, because everything's on video. You know, it's all video. And you know, if you start putting things like that together, you know, and start to put together handles and everything, it could get, you know, it could help out the business quite a bit.
Right, but I think that's only going to be for the select grade A racetracks. It's the B tracks, C tracks that are really hurting because they're losing money by racing. You know, by opening and racing without having full crowds, without having dining availability and the food concession stands, it's just very difficult. The Meadowlands did send out a release today about the Hamiltonian Day, which usually draws 10,000-15,000 people to the Meadowlands. They may only be able to have tops, maybe 5,000 people. And the only way, if you go on the track apron, which is going to be limited, or you have to make reservations, you have to be a horseman and make reservations, you know, because the dining room is being totally reserved just for horse people that are racing that day.
Right.
For the owners. And,
well, you know, talking about the owners and drivers and all the difficulties that we're having, you know, here, just for example, like for the Kentucky Derby now that's coming up, you know, here in 2 months, there's Kentucky Racing Commission is wanting to limit the jockeys for the Derby just to Churchill jockeys. They don't want people coming in from out of state. And that's why I asked earlier if the drivers were having, you know, problems going back and forth, you know, with the standardbreds, because now, you know, the thoroughbred tracks are starting to put a clamp down. And, you know, if you're going to race here, then you stay here. You know, you don't start coming back and forth. And that's got a lot of implications for some of these top derby horses, you know.
Well, it can, but it just doesn't make sense because majority of these horse people have had to be tested for COVID-19. And, you know, to me, it's almost like, what do you call it? When you travel from state to state, you got to have a Coggins test within 30 days.
Right.
Well, I think every trainer, groom, and driver have had COVID-19 testing at least within 30 days, if not, they have to renew it, and then they're able to come and go. And the jock rooms have to be different, changed up so that they're, you know, CDC approved, you know, they're spacious enough away. And that's it. I mean, and everybody has to wear a mask. And they go on with racing like they have been. To deny people coming from one country to another, I can understand that, especially if you're a Canadian, if you're in Canada, you don't want people coming from the United States because we're such high COVID, you know, results. It's ridiculous.
And, oh, yeah.
I mean, if I were to go to New Jersey right now from Florida, I would have to stay quarantined for 2 weeks. So I couldn't even go to the Meadowlands if I wanted to and race. I don't even know if I can get into Kentucky if I wanted to, you know, go or got a seat for the Derby.
Right now, Saratoga and Del Mar, and there's quite a few other tracks that are doing it, they're eliminating jockeys coming from, you know, out of state or from other tracks.
Well, and they can do it, but it's absolutely wrong. If they're all tested within 30 days, they should be allowed to come in and compete. And that they have to make sure that because they're not using all the space that they have available to them because of COVID-19, they should be able to take remote restrooms and stuff and turn it into jockey rooms.
Right. Well, you know, see, this is the problem that they're having at Churchill. The president of Churchill now is Kevin Flannery. They said that they're mulling over whether or not to, you know, do the restriction. They said they like to do it 5 days of racing, you know, in the Derby week. It's not an easy call for them. Their priority and safety, you know, can be done. It's not like they're coming, you know, and going, you know, back and forth. It's just 5 days, and they can be tested, like you said. you know, for the virus. And, you know, now all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, some of the top Derby horses, or actually any of the Derby horses, could literally not have the best rider on their horse because that rider is in California or New York or Florida.
Just this past week, I saw at the Meadowlands, Mike Wilder, top driver at the Meadows. He went to the Meadowlands pace. He had a horse in and he had a drive, and there was no problems, no question whatsoever that he should be allowed to drive his horse. And he did. And granted, the horse did not fare that well, but it still, he had the ability to do it. And it doesn't, you know, that's just, I don't want to say, how can I say it right? It's wrong. It's just wrong that they can't have precautions preset to allow these guys to come and race. You want to try and have the best jockey with the best horses, and Kentucky's trying to stop that from happening when they don't have to.
Right. Well, you know, that's like the rules have changed, you know, here, and it's causing problems for the riders. Like, I read Ortiz Jr. He had to give his up his mount on Dr. Post that ran in the second in the Haskell, you know. And Mike Smith would be available for, wouldn't be able to ride Midnight Bison. And then Maximum Security, you know, they don't even know if they bring him from Del Mar, you know, out here to run these races. And so, you know, that in itself throws everything up in the air, because right now the teams that are got these horses, the grooms, the exercise riders, the jockeys, you know, it's working. They're winning races. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're coming in and saying, hey, I might not be able to, you know, ride in the Derby, you know, on my horse because I've been in California or, what, you know, what have you.
Exactly.
It's going to pose a big problem for the horse.
I wonder what the jockey club is doing about this.
Well, they haven't chimed in on it yet, but I'm sure that in the next week or two you're going to find out, because we got the Travers coming up, you know, August the 8th at Churchill, and you know, it's going to be an interesting race, you know, to see what happens and where they go from there, especially like out of Del Mar. You know, they got a nice race, the Shared Belief, coming up on August the 1st. And it's a potential Derby prep race. So, you know, it looks like if you're going to want to ride in the Derby, you're going to have to get to Kentucky and just, you know, hunker down and, you know, wait 60 days for the Derby. And there's not that many races, you know, at Ellis Park that you could prep a horse for that would be worth going to, you know, Ellis Park for. Because, like, the 9th of August is the Ellis Park Derby. It's a, you know, it's a $200,000 race at a mile and an eighth. And, you know, that could serve as a prep for the Derby. You know, at least you and your rider would be in there. But then you got to think about it. Look at all the money that the jockey and trainers would be losing if they can't ride, you know, these $500,000, $600,000 races, you know, to get to the Derby.
No, you're right. It's a topsy-turvy year, and this is just adding to it. But you mentioned, you know, tell us about the Haskell. How did Monmouth Park do with attendance and the big race?
Oh, the Haskell was really good. You know, it was everything they thought it would be, and then some. There's some improvements that they can make, you know, on doing what they're doing. You know, it's just a matter. The whole fact of the matter is self-discipline. Is you got to wear the mask, you got to take the test, you know, the temperatures and all. You have to do the social distancing, and the powers that be have figured it out that, you know, they can go and put a group of let's say four people together, you know, at a table that's socially, you know, distanced from all the others. And what they found at the Haskell was is the information when they started taking down, you know, who was coming, is the fact that, okay, you, the four of you people that, that are getting this one, table A, where did you come from? Well, you know, we're husband and wife and two kids, you know, so that's good, you know, because they're together anyhow. You know, it's the ones that come from out of state. You know, you don't want to have somebody coming from California, New York, Florida, you know, and Illinois, you know, at the same table. Those are the ones that could possibly, you know, transmit, you know, the virus. And then the other thing that they were thinking, they asked, was where are you going when you leave here? Are you going out all across the country? And a lot of them said, no, we're going back to our, you know, our homes, our, you know, that type of thing. So there's so many things that, you know, they're trying to figure out and how to stop this thing. And, you know, I tell you what, it's going to be tough for the Derby, because now when they get that figured out, there's several groups in Louisville that are talking about boycotting and protesting at the Derby to throw on top of the virus. So, you know, it's going to be difficult. I just don't know where it's going to go.
Well, it's got to go someplace, because these events are going to take place. And if it's all said and done, and that's the way it has to be, then that's the way it has to be. Then everybody has to use Churchill Downs jockeys and send their horses to trainers that are able to take care of them for the week leading up. That's all there is. I mean, I don't know if they're going to let, are they going to let the trainers come in too? Or is it just the jockeys?
That's going to be the interesting part. They want to keep everybody socially distanced, you know. And I've even heard one racetrack official say, well, you know, a lot of times these jockeys or these owners will race in California and they don't send the trainer, the assistant trainer goes out. So, you know, in the thoroughbred business, we can't have an assistant trainer or a farm manager, you know, saddle the horse and, you know, oversee the horse. You know, that can be done. So I think that's what they're trying to figure out, is how to eliminate, you know, a massive amount of people coming and going. You know,
right. Well, and I think it's difficult enough, you know, just for the crowds. I mean, if they have to assign seating for everybody, that, you know, right, you can't go wandering around. And we understand you have to order food, and then it's it'll be brought to you, even from the concession stands. No standing in line waiting to get stuff, and it's going to be difficult.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think some of the people are talking about are like the show horse people, for example. The people we had on from Fox Lee on the program a month or so ago,
right,
they're very successful over there because they've got it down. What they did, Steve, is they know, like say, for example, we got quite a few horses over there this week that
right,
we're showing. And what they did is they all left our barns here. They went from here to Fox Lee in Sarasota, Florida. They came out and they put them all in the same barn. And then Fox Lee, show you how they're thinking, they brought portable restrooms in to each barn. And if you were in that barn, you could use that restroom. If you weren't in that barn, you couldn't use it. It was their private restroom.
Mm-hmm.
And the food was delivered directly to the barn, and it's working. You know, it's really working because, you know, they're not getting out and communicating and getting mixed in with the general public. And I heard one of the trainers say, if you take the general public out of the horse racing, that's the only thing in horse racing that you can do and not be hurt, take the general public out, because their alternative is TV programming like Fox, ABC, you know, IEN, you know, all the other people. And that's where they're all going to. And you know, and it's working. They still can participate in their sport. They can still earn money in their sport, and they don't have to really, you know, get out and mingle with the folks. And I think that's what's happened at Fox Lee. That's what's happened at Gulfstream. You know, Gulfstream from jump, they didn't. All they did is make sure that you social distanced, you sanitized, and they kept a strong record of who was coming and who was going. And that's right.
If you have a proper game plan installed, then you can go forward with it. I mean, as long as they have the racing and television, you know, is covering it, or YouTube, you can see the videos. I mean, even now at Harness Link, I think half the tracks that we cover in North America, we're able to put a replay of the race, in with the story that we get at night. So, you know, fans can go, can read about it, click on it, boom. And a lot of other sites don't offer that.
Right. Well, you know, like we're sitting here, you know, doing what we're doing. We're really expanding a lot, and that's because BBS has just done so much, you know, with radio and YouTube and the video end of it. And so a lot of the tracks that I've talked to, you know, they have no qualms with us using their video. And like right now, I'm watching Saratoga Live. We'll be able to watch Belmont Live. I can watch racing on IEN. You can watch racing from Japan, from Hong Kong, all live, because they're getting their product out there, and what they're doing is they're driving their viewers to the OTBs. And the more exposure they have for, you know, watching their product, you know, that helps them drive, you know, money to the windows. You know, that's what they're doing. You know, and it's working out. It's a great
deal. Well, you have to hope that it's working out. And the numbers are showing that it's working out. I mean, millions and millions of dollars, euros, pounds, whatever, are getting bet every day around the world on horse racing.
Oh, right. Well, you know, it's like I'm sitting here and we're looking at the point standings, and, you know, the Derby and Churchill's adjusted that, you know, accordingly. Some races that had no Derby points, you know, now have Derby points because, you know, they're the only show in town. But it was quite interesting. 'Tis the Law for Barclay Tag. It'll be running in the $1 million Travers Stakes coming up here soon. He's already earned $1,437,000 this year. You know, and that's unbelievable.
That's not chump change.
What's that?
That's not chump change.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bob Baffert was authentic. He's earned $1,011,000. You know, you just start going down through here. You know, most of these top contenders, you know, for the Derby are earning anywhere from, you know, 400,000 up to, you know, a million or more. And that runs true all the way down through the top 22 horses. You know, they're racing, they're making money. When you've got 22 horses in a race this year that have made anywhere from, you know, $400,000 on up, you know, in a sport that's been, you know, hampered by the virus and travel and things of that.
Oh, no, it just shows that the racing is viable and there's money to be made, that's for sure.
Right. And you know, I'll give you an example. At Gulfstream Park, you know, we've talked about the handle that they have there. It's amazing.
Correct.
See, $5 million a day.
Yes.
$5 million a day plus. You know, and you know, they're like the current pick pool for the pick four pool at Gulfstream is $177,000. You know, it just popped up to $180,000. So that's telling me that there's a lot of people going to OTBs, you know, and bet, you know, and the reason they're doing it is because they have so much information put out there through places like Harness Link, through twin spires and, you know, things like that. And that makes a big difference. Now, it's my understanding that you can give, Harness Link can give pretty quick results from the racing across the country and around the world.
That's right. And now we have an arrangement with Roberts Communications that we're able to get a lot of racetrack video immediately after the race to post, which other sites do not have. So, I mean, it's a nice bonus. It takes me a few minutes longer to set up and post the story. But, you know, when I'm done, you can go to Harness Link and read the story and watch the video right there.
Right. Yeah. Maybe you know somebody in Harness Link, and I noticed on Harness Link they got a YouTube channel, but there's no video on it. Maybe if you knew somebody over there, you could put in a good word for us and we could get every
Thursday. Yeah, I have to look into that because there was video on that YouTube channel, and I don't know what happened to it.
Well, maybe we can get you back on the YouTube there, and every Thursday have flying turns on there. You know? We've got to start getting all that information out about our horses. We've got to save our horse industry, Speed. And it's guys like me and you that can do it, you know, just the regular guys that are thinking all the time.
Well, all you have to do is bet the Ramona Hill last week. She paid $20 to win.
That's a good $2 bet.
Jim, I don't know if Gimpanzee paid $3 to win, which... I know Tall Dark Stranger was less than that, but a couple of these good horses, a smart wager, and yeah, you're in the pink.
Yeah. Well, you know, Steve, talking about all this and all the ideas that you and I come up with, and you've come up with a bunch of good ones over the years, I'm telling you, we got to start promoting. We got to name that duck.
That's right. That's right. We have to name that duck and get him to, because he's going to be giving us picks for big, big races.
Yep. If we start doing that, you know, we can really get something going here. I think that would be fun for everybody to enjoy, and see naming that duck and the things that like we're doing here. And what I like about it is you don't have to be a gambler to do that. You know, that's something that the whole family, you know, grandma or the kids can name that duck, you know. And, you know, that's the kind of things that if we do on radio and television, you know, we could really get some new fans, you know, involved.
That's right.
That type of thing. So we're going to have to come up with a good name for it, float it around in the pool, and then every week... On our video, we can show him out there and floating around with the name of the big winner of the race coming up on Saturday.
There you go. Okay, name the duck.
Yep,
so now, as we move forward, are there any major thoroughbred stakes coming up next week, this weekend?
Yeah, we sure do. We got out at Del Mar. This is a race. It's called the Shared Belief. It's at a mile and an eighth for $100,000, or a mile and a sixteenth for, you know, $100,000. And a lot of times trainers at this stage and point look at that race, and if you come out of that race good and tighten him up, you know, you got one more race that you could run him, you know, that would be a significant value. You know, to get him to the Derby, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, so that's coming up. And then we got on August the 8th, Hamiltonian Day, we've got the Travers at a mile and a quarter for $1 million.
And, oh, boy.
What a conflict. Nice test.
Between Saratoga and Meadowlands.
Right. Well, you know what's going
to
be interesting about
switching
this,
back and forth?
All those horses. What's that?
No. We're starting to run out of time. It's going to be interesting because Tiz the Law is going to be back, and we'll see how he fared from his long rest.
Right. And you've got to remember, the Derby's a mile and a quarter, too. So you could see all the horses that run in the Travers. If they come out of that good, they could go back to the Derby. But, yeah, Steve, if you send me a picture of the duck, I'll get it up on the website. We'll start running a Name the Duck campaign. And what we should do is have the name of the duck be chosen on Hambo Day. What do you think?
Yeah, we could definitely gear up for that, and that'll be his first pick. You know, we'll have him. He'll be swimming by with the name of the horse that's going to win the Hamiltonian, and then everyone can have a look at him, and we'll come up with a name.
Yeah, we can do that. And then what we'll do on the other side, we'll put the thoroughbred at the wire name for who won the Travers.
Yeah. Well, the only thing is we just can't name him Daffy because Disney will come after us.
They'll come after us. All right.
Okay.
All right, Steve. Well, we had a good one today. You know, next week we're going to do the video and get all that good stuff going. And, you know, everything's looking good. Horses business is getting better. Everybody's staying healthy. You know, so I appreciate
it. Good
the time we had today. BBS, thank you. And we'll see you next week.